up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, it was an interesting day yesterday for the NBA. Let's just put it that way, as the regular season comes to an end tonight and we head into the postseason. And a postseason without LeBron James, but now a postseason in which we go in celebrating the career of Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade, who played their final home games yesterday, but then also the news of Magic Johnson stepping down as president of the Lakers. So a lot to digest and a lot to unpack. First, for the Wade and Dirk crowd, great careers. And as I said earlier today, I feel guilty that I didn't appreciate Dirk's career like I should have. 21 years with the Mavericks. Always knew he was a great player, but when watching the highlights of the ceremony, I really, really should have just been more attentive to this kind of stuff that he was doing with his career in Dallas. Maybe I was taking it for granted or whatnot. And then watching Dwayne Wade and his run in Miami and closing it out there where his career began, talking about how, you know, his agent told him that the Heat were going to take him in the draft out, you know, coming out of Marquette. Then, of course, the beer commercial that that showed all the people that had been affected by Dwayne Wade's career. It's a very emotional day for those two players. But then Magic announces that he's going to step down, and he does so in a way that is so chaotic and raises so many questions about the Lakers that it really sort of overshadows the moment of those two guys, especially Dirk, who's, really came into the season, and he came in and we still weren't sure yet. And he finally announced his retirement yesterday, saying he was done and he was finished. And Dwayne Wade, of course, wrapping up his career. We knew that because he was getting a lot of the accolades on the road and whatnot. But Magic Johnson leaves the Lakers in a state of flux. And Magic Johnson leaves the Lakers in a state of confusion that Jeannie Buss is going to have to step in and try to fix. It's one thing to say Magic did a good job, Magic is gone, Magic has left, but it does raise so many questions about why he left, what is exactly going to happen with the Los Angeles Lakers going forward, and what does LeBron think of all of that? It is really, really a big day yesterday as the NBA steps into what we have all been waiting for, the start of the postseason. Now we got three things yesterday all at once hitting us right in the face. All right, 800-777-2907. Come on, we'll talk a little bit about the Masters that starts on Thursday, as well as unpacking what's going on in L.A.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for being here on SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Would you like to get the lowest prices on most of your airline tickets? Smart Fares can save you up to 70% on those airline tickets, foreign or domestic travel. Call now for special unpublished rates, 800-296-1432, 800-296-1432 for Smart Fares. All right, so the Masters begins on Thursday at Augusta National. All right, look, Tiger Woods, I'd love for him to win one more time. You know, just because of nostalgia. I like Tiger. I want Tiger to win. It's been long enough that he took the green jacket. 2005. My goodness, 2005 was the last time he won it at Augusta National. I mean, we've gone through, you know, the presidency of Barack Obama in that time. We've gone through, you know what? Last time Tiger Woods won the Masters, I'm trying to think. Tom Brady won the Super Bowl against the Eagles. That's how long ago it was. So I want to see Tiger win at Augusta one more time. All right, so he was asked yesterday about being a long time to winning the Masters, and here's what Tiger said.
I would have foreseen that for sure. After I won my 14th, I felt like I still had, you know, plenty more major championships that I could win. Unfortunately, I just didn't do it. You know, I put myself there with chances on the back nine on various Sundays and just haven't done it. You know, hopefully this year I put myself there again and hopefully I'll get it done.
Remember, the last time he won a major was in 2008. He won the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, and he did it on a broken leg. Remember that? He was in a playoff with Rocco Mediate, and he had like a broken leg. And then he left golf for a while to go repair himself and go fix himself up, and he has not won a major since. The closest he came was he had the lead going into the final round at Hazeltine in 2009 and lost to Y.E. Yang. And then, of course, a couple of months later, his wife was trying to save his life using a 7-iron to bash a window of their car and rescued him by dragging him out while he was in a stupor. Right. That was actually the press release. The reality was she was probably chasing him with that 7-iron. He was looking to get the heck out of the house. Nevertheless, all of his marital ordeals came
apart.
But
we can't speculate.
We can't speculate.
I want to believe that Tiger was just being saved.
Who are we to? Who are we to?
We don't know.
To say otherwise.
I mean, there's a lot of contradicting information that came out afterwards, but
nevertheless,
we got to stick with the story they told.
That is correct. So he hasn't won since 2008. Which again, it's amazing when you watch that U.S. Open. You're like, oh my God! Not only is he going to beat Jack Nicklaus's record, he's going to dominate it. He's going to kill it.
Yeah.
He's going to obliterate it. Nope. Did not happen.
He's going to make it untouchable.
That did not happen. But there was he won in 1997 when he won the Masters at 21 years old. Remember they tiger-proofed the course? Remember that was the big term?
Yes.
They're like, we got to extend this thing. This kid is crushing it. He was hitting driver and like pitching wedge to each of the par fives back then at Augusta. Like Augusta had par fives, I kid you not, that were like 478 yards long. Like that's some of the par fives. Tiger was like, what? I could hit a 3-wood 300 yards. I could hit a driver like 320. Like back then he had tremendous club head speed. So he could hit the ball any way he wanted. And then he could hit a pitching wedge like 160 yards. So he was hitting driver and pitching wedge to these par fives. And they went, nah, that's enough of that. We got to make this longer. We got to stop this nonsense. They added rough to a course that didn't have any. Augusta didn't have any rough on it at all. There was no first cut. The whole place was a fairway. You could hit it anywhere. And if it wasn't on pine straw, it was on fairway grass. And then Tiger came and like, we got to toughen this up. And you know what? That bothered so many golfers because there were all these other golfers that were like, look, I know this kid, Tiger Woods, could dominate this golf course, but you've just taken me out of play. Like, I'm 50. I play here every year. Now I can't play this course. It's too long. I can't hit driver 3-wood on par fours. I can't do that. But Tiger, he changed Augusta. When he won in 2001, he completed the Tiger Slam. He won in 2002. At that time, he had back-to-back majors. He was heading into a year where he had back-to-back majors because he won the U.S. Open the following year. Then he won in 2005. And he did it in between the Mickelson sandwich. Mickelson had won 2004 and 2006. There was that 2005 where, I forget who won in 2005, but nevertheless, it was Woods was in between there. And that was it. That was the last time he won. So he had to put the jacket on Phil in 2006. But I miss Tiger a lot. I really hope he does well. There was that one tournament in the Masters a couple of years ago where he hit the flag stick and like the ball bounced in the water. And so he's had some bad luck recently at the Masters. But he loves the course. He knows how to play it. He knows where to – the key to Augusta – is we don't have majors where a tournament is played at the same place every single year. So you may go to Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open and it's set up for a U.S. Open, but you may not see that again for like 10 years. But Augusta, you go there every year. In Augusta, you have to, you can't drive it there. You can't hit the, like if the pin is on the left side on a particular hole, you can't go for it. You have to hit it on the right side. You know, famously the 16th green, for example, at Augusta on Sundays is where you have to kind of hit the ball over the pin into the back end of the green, because that's where the ball will then hit the slope and then trickle back down the slope towards the hole that is near the water. That's where you have to hit it. So you have to know these things going in. Remember in 2005, Tiger hit that chip shot. Remember that chip shot that went up the hill and then went down and then the ball hovered on the edge of the cup for a while and then dropped in. Like, you can't make that. If you had 1,000 chip shots, you wouldn't be able to do that. That's how tricky the greens are. That's the one thing about Augusta that I love, is the fact that you'll see this over time when you watch the tournament, is that a guy will, the putt will be, like, let's say to his right, and he's putting to the left. Like, his back is to the hole. Because in order to get the ball to the hole, he has to hit it so far left that it will go up the slope and then back down the slope, catch another slope, and to the hole. That's tricky stuff. You really got to know your game. I mean, it's one thing to be able to strike the ball and make the ball go left to right or whatever, but you also have to make sure you are aiming at the right spots, because if you don't, you're in big trouble. I mean, at Augusta, the announcers will say things like, the ball will look like it's 2 feet off the green, right? But because we can't see elevation very well, the announcers will say, that is going to be a really tricky up and down. And you're on TV going, what are you talking about? He's 2 feet off the green and the hole is like 7, maybe 8 yards. He's got to just put a nice chip on it. But what you don't know is that where that pin is and where his ball is, he's probably about maybe 3 or 4 inches above it. And he's not going to get the chip to hold. That the chip is going, he's going to hit the green and it's going to be gone. And also the hole may be cut next to a ridge that if he can't get the ball to stop before it hits the hole, once it goes past the hole, hits the ridge. Good night. It's on the other end of the green. That's how tricky that place is. Here's Tiger once again being asked about his week at the Masters.
Tiger, do you feel like you need to win here again, or do you just want to win here again?
Well, I don't really need to win again. I really want to.
Well, that's a good line. I think he does. I think he does. I hate to admit this, but I think Tiger does need to win again. I think Tiger needs... Listen, it's hard because he dominated this sport so long. It's hard to forget all that. But it's been 11 years since he won a major. He's got to win a major. Just to put some sort of, I don't know, cherry on a golfing Sunday. I think I've used that analogy twice today. But I don't want Tiger to be defined by an era. I want Tiger to be defined by a career. A long career. Not one that was, because Tiger's was, I won at 21, and then I rebuilt my swing because I was smart enough and I was aware enough to know that the swing I had, that young swing it as hard as you can, was not going to last on tour. So I had to take rebuild the swing, which took me out of contention in a lot of tournaments in 1998. I came back. I won the PGA in 99. I lost the Masters in 2000, and then I won the U.S. Open, I won the British Open, I won the PGA, and then I won the Masters again to complete the Slam, and then I won a whole bunch more majors, and then all of a sudden it stopped. It just stopped. And there's this huge gap where I didn't win. And I don't want it to be defined that way. I want it to be defined of, I won a lot, and then when in my 40s, I won a few more. I may have had this big gap, but I won a few more. So I kind of do. I kind of think he has to. But I understand where he's coming from. Listen, when you win 4 green jackets, you don't have to do anything. I mean, you don't have to win 5. But if he's looking for a higher level, if he's looking for the level like Mickelson would never obtain, like Mickelson is a great golfer. But because he came at the Tiger Woods era and because he didn't win enough majors, he's never going to be the greatest of all time. He's not Jack. I don't even think he's Ben Hogan. But Tiger was looking for that. Tiger always wanted that. So if he still wants it, and maybe he doesn't, he's got to win. He's got to win. And no better place than the Masters. Because in the Masters, you can compete until you're over 50. Look, ask Freddie Couples. Freddie Couples is on the leaderboard almost every year because he loves the course. He knows how to play it even when he's 55. And the U.S. Open may get away from you as you get older. Maybe the wind and the elements get to you at the British Open a little bit. But The Masters, if you know how to play it, will always be in your arsenal as you try to win and be competitive, even at an older age. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming up, there is a rumor around the NFL that, if true, could really shake things up. I'll tell you about it next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, you can now earn O Rewards points online at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You get a $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com. Become an O Rewards member today from O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, before we get to this NFL news, Ron has come up with a list of things that have happened since Tiger Woods last won at the Masters. The Masters. Okay.
Yep.
Since 2005.
So, yeah, since April 10th, 2005. That was the last time he won a Masters.
Okay.
Apple has sold more than 1.2 billion iPhones.
Oh, boy.
And that's gone up.
Yeah, that has.
Just in that sentence alone. Right now, it just went up. Probably another billion. let's see. Serena Williams has won 16 Grand Slam titles.
Since 2005?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. That's great. That's awesome. 16 of them.
Yep. LeBron James has scored well over 28,000 points since that day.
Yeah, LeBron James was just 2 years in the league.
Yep.
I think he was entering year, I don't want to say two.
Maybe
because he was drafted in 2003.
And don't forget, he gave us the decision.
That's right.
Since Tiger of last was
very true,
donning a green jacket.
God bless him.
let's see. Michael Phelps would go on to win at least 20 more Olympic medals.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Rory McIlroy, four major champions.
Yep.
Chips since Tiger won.
Yep.
Lindsey Vonn has, nearly almost 90 World Cup wins.
That's crazy.
World Cup racing wins.
That's crazy.
And Lionel Messi probably approaching somewhere around the 650, 670 mark as far as goals scored.
All right, so get with it, Tiger. I mean, my God, we didn't even have the college football playoff the last time when he won a major.
When Messi became a player for Barcelona, he was 17 years old.
My God.
So, Tiger, time to put on the green jacket. I know you don't need to win, but yes, we need you to want it.
2005 has been long enough.
Oh, you know, the only thing I'm really asking for, I just want him to be in contention on Sunday wearing the red shirt, black pants, and just, you know, looking fierce.
Yeah, me too.
That's all I want. I mean, at this point, he doesn't even have to win. I mean, I would love to see him win. I think it would be a great story. I mean, you know, we were talking all week about the great story arc of Virginia. Having gone from the worst to the best in a year's time. Why not Tiger?
Why not Tiger? I think it's pretty cool. I hope I am pulling for him. I just want a few more Tiger moments before he's gone.
We just want him, and just need him in contention. That's all we care about. Just be relevant on Sunday.
All right, so the Masters getting underway on Thursday. Par 3 today. By the way, no one has ever won the par 3 and the tournament in the same year.
All right, so Tiger tank.
So just be aware of that today. All right, so here's the NFL bit of news. Jack Del Rio says that Seattle Seahawks could be parting ways with Russell Wilson, and he would not be surprised if he was traded and playing for a new team next season.
Wow.
I don't understand this at all.
Is it all because he wanted a pay raise?
He wants a new contract by the 15th, which is coming up, which is any day now. But he's going to be on a year-to-year franchise tag. In 2020, it'll be $30 million. So here's the deal. Russell Wilson is going to finish out his contract, then be franchise tagged in 2020, 2021, and 2022. That will be back-to-back-to-back years of being franchise tag. So Jack Del Rio saying to NFL Network, quote, "Don't be surprised if before it's all said and done, when we line up for the season next year, if Russell Wilson isn't quarterbacking somewhere else and the Seahawks haven't gone and gotten a quarterback that they think for the future." Well, why wouldn't the future be Russell Wilson? Wilson had a good year last year. He's one of the main reasons the Seahawks were competitive.
It actually, some would say, is the only reason.
I would venture to say, without being disrespectful to the other Seahawks, I would venture to say it was the only reason.
Not trying to be mean here, but
why would he be quarterbacking somewhere else? And don't tell me he's going to cost too much money. You pay quarterbacks. It's not like a running back or a wide receiver like Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, where you're like, I could probably not use these guys. Good quarterbacks in this league are really, really hard to come by. So what would make the Seahawks want to go try to gamble and find somebody else when they know they have the guy that would they really trade him? I can't believe this. I can't believe they just wouldn't sign him. You pay quarterbacks, right? I mean, that's how it works in this league. How many times have we said there's only a handful of people on the planet that can do this well? When you find that individual, you give them as much money as you possibly can, right? If you're John Schneider, what is preventing you from getting sitting down with Russell's people and going, all right, well, what's the payment? What's it going to be? What do you want? Trading Russell Wilson? Are you crazy?
Well, because, you know, the quarterbacks are easy to come by.
Yeah, right? Just go grab 10 of them.
Yeah.
Right? Go.
They grow on trees, Tony.
God. Yeah, they're everywhere. Everywhere. Especially one that's good. I mean, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I would say at least, I mean, definitely top 15, maybe top 10 in the league right now.
And here's the thing. Do you really want to gamble and roll the dice with somebody else?
No, you don't.
Like, really? Like, do you realize how lucky you get as a franchise when you take a quarterback, a young quarterback, and you realize, oh, he's going to work out. He is going to make it. He can throw the ball. He can win games. He can read defenses. He can hit his receivers in stride. He doesn't turn the ball over all the time. Like, when you've reached that, when you've got that guy and he works out, whether he's the number one overall pick or you find him in the sixth round, it doesn't matter where it is. When you've got a young quarterback and you play him and that kid makes it, what a relief that is.
Well, I mean, especially that's taken you to a Super Bowl multiple times and has won one.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, should have won two if it wasn't for your bonehead play calling. You kidding me? Trade Russell Wilson. I got some friends in Seattle. I'm going to have to hit them up and go, really, what's the story with this? What's going on behind the scenes?
Is it really coming down to money?
Because, please don't tell me that.
Well, I mean, because, you know, I'm saying it because look at what happened to the defense.
Right.
They didn't want to resign anybody. It just kind of packed on. Now, I get that the defense was kind of somewhat aging, but still, I mean, you sold away pretty much everyone.
My thought process is this, and I may be oversimplifying this, and I understand. But if you're running the cap for your team, you're running the finances for the team, right? If you're paying a corner over value, let's say, right? If you're overpaying a corner, you may go, he's one of the best in the game, but same with running back. If you're overpaying a linebacker and you know it, okay, I don't care what I'm paying my quarterback if he's successful. I don't lose sleep over the salary of my quarterback if he's successful. It is in line with what every team is paying their guy, right? I mean, Detroit hasn't won anything and yet made sure that Matt Stafford got paid when the time came. Right, this is the price of being successful in the NFL. You can debate the other positions in terms of how much and what you can get away with. Steelers do it all the time. Everybody knows that. That's why they weren't going to give Le'Veon Bell the offer that he wanted, even though they offered him a lot of money. But they weren't going to give him the offer that they wanted. They don't overpay. They don't overvalue. But they'll pay Ben Roethlisberger through the nose, because you could set your franchise back a decade if you don't find the right quarterback. I mean, that's the thing. Remember, I mean, it's so rare that teams win a Super Bowl with a quarterback that's just okay. That's just fine. You better make sure. So I want to know, I may do a little bit more research on this, but Jack Del Rio coming out and making this a possibility and a confident possibility nonetheless, really interesting. And that shakes a lot of things up, because if he's really on the trading block, if I'm the Giants, I'm on the phone with them now. If Russell Wilson's available, I'd go get him. SB Nation AM.
This
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
About 2 weeks into the Major League Baseball season. All right, what do we got so far on the slate? Jared Diamond covers MLB for Wall Street Journal. He's on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. Brought to you by Progressive is Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It's tough to ask about a current team situation given so early in the season and so much baseball left to play. But are you surprised by this Red Sox 3-9 start? And if you are, what can we peg it on right now?
Yeah, of course. It's definitely shocking. You never expect a team with as much talent as the Red Sox to start this slowly. Look, we have seen in the past teams that win the World Series sort of come out a little sluggish the next season. There's a reason why no one has repeated as champions since 99-2000. It is a challenge, both physically and mentally, to come back after winning the World Series. But that said, there's some concerns, I think, about the Red Sox. First, number one being Chris Sale. He's their ace. They just gave him a giant contract, and he's been terrible. I mean, he's had three starts. The ERA is 9.00. Rick Porcello's been bad. Really, all of their pitching has been bad, and that, you know, that is a concern because they're going to hit. They're definitely going to hit. But if their starting pitching does not come around, it could be a challenge for them. I think what's fortunate for the Red Sox so far is that the Yankees haven't been very good either.
Yeah. Looking at the long term of that division, and I do expect it, pretty much everybody would probably expect Boston to start coming around, win some games, get back into this. But I mean, is there anybody in the division, and you mentioned the Yankees, that could run away with it so early that it makes that task really daunting if you fall too far back in April?
I think it's unlikely, just because I think that the division's going to be very, very competitive. Going into the season, in my sort of preseason predictions, I had three playoff teams coming out of the AL East, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Rays. I believe the Rays are legitimate, and I just think those three teams are going to continue to sort of compete with each other throughout the year. Now, Tampa Bay has gone off to an amazing start. They look really, really good. And I guess the question is, are they able to sustain it? I do believe the Rays are going to be in the conversation as we get, you know, into the summer and the fall. But I don't believe it's going to be a situation where the Red Sox and Yankees are buried. Those teams are too good for them not to recover. It's been a slow start, but it really has only been, what, 10 days or a week?
Yep.
Less than 2 weeks. So but we have to have a little patience.
All right. How good is Seattle? I mean, they're putting up some runs. I mean, again, we always preface this with it's early, but my God, that's an impressive baseball team. I have no idea how they're pulling this off. What is going right in Seattle?
They could hit. And I do believe they're going to continue to hit. They have a very, very good line. You know, they had Edwin Encarnacion, who's been one of the best power hitters in baseball over the last 5 or 6 years. They wanted to trade him. They acquired him basically to flip him. They were unable to find a trade partner, and he's turned out to be absolutely fantastic. The other guy who is someone that I don't think a lot of people know who's just a very, very good young player is Domingo Santana, another outfielder that they acquired this offseason. We forget that Domingo Santana hit 30 home runs in 2017 for the Brewers. And then last season sort of was blocked when they acquired Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain and suddenly didn't have a job anymore. So this is a guy who could play, and he's off to a fantastic start as well. But the thing about Seattle is, do we buy the pitching? You know, they have no bullpen. Their bullpen is terrible. I don't believe it's going to hold up. And the starting rotation also has some questions. So I'm just not sold that the pitching is going to be able to survive an entire summer, but I do believe they're going to hit. And remember, they're doing all this so far without Kyle Seager, who we thought was going to be one of their best hitters, and he's not there.
Does a start like Seattle? I mean, again, it's early, but does a start like that was that a team that was on your radar for the West in terms of being a challenge for the Astros in for that division?
No, not at all. I don't think they were on many people's radars at all, because it looked like they were blowing it up and starting things all over. Remember, they got rid of many of their good players, James Paxton being one, they look like they were saying, okay, we're going to reset. Robinson Cano was traded as well. Edwin Diaz, their star closer, who they probably would love to have right now. They could use him. So, no, I don't think anyone saw this. But the thing about the AL West is that you get past Houston, and it's not exactly the strongest division. You know, Texas and Anaheim don't really inspire much confidence. I know Oakland was great last year, but I don't know how they did it. I don't think a lot of people really quite understand how they did it, and there's a lot of questions about whether the A's be able to repeat that performance. So the AL West sort of seemed open for somebody to come up and at least compete for that second-place spot behind Houston, and maybe Seattle is better than we thought. It would be funny, considering how many years in a row they tried to go all in and failed, that the year they try to blow it up is the year they succeed.
Let's go to the Phillies with Bryce Harper's addition to a lineup that's already pretty good. And how is it gelling? How's it looking from like 10 games into the season? All of those great pieces coming together in a lineup.
Well, Bryce has been great. You know, oftentimes it seems like with these big free agents, they sign giant contracts, go to a new team and struggle at the beginning because of the pressure, because of just feeling like they have to deliver early on for a new fan base, for a new market. That has certainly not happened to Bryce Harper. He has been absolutely fantastic going into the season so far, and the Phillies have played great. They're 7-3. I think a lot of people viewed them as the favorites in the NL East. They have looked like it so far. They had a great offseason. Besides just Bryce Harper, you know, JT Realmuto, Gene Segura, Andrew McCutcheon, they went out and did work this winter, and they're clicking. They look like they're going to be a force to the NL East. And you know, any questions about Bryce Harper? Last season, we remember he had a bad year by his standard, especially a bad first half. So I think it was very important to Bryce to come out strong and remind everyone that he is an elite player, one of the best players in the league, and he has absolutely looked like it through his first 10 games.
Jared, can the Mets be competitive? I mean, not last night's game with Jacob deGrom notwithstanding. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in the game. They've got this incredible young talent, and Peter Alonso's hitting home runs. Michael Conforto continues to do well. Can the Mets be competitive? Maybe not win the division, but can they be around in September?
I think the Mets are going to compete for a wild card spot. I do. I thought it going into the year as well. I thought they were a team that maybe was being overlooked just little bit. I like the moves they made. The starting pitching, you know, is going to be there. It will be. I know Jacob deGrom had a tough night last night, but that was the first bad game he's had in like a year. So I think he was entitled at this point. But the rotation will be there. Edwin Diaz is one of the best closers in the league. They also acquired Yuris Familia, so their bullpen is short up. The question with the Mets was and is, will they stay healthy? That's always been the question with the Mets. Will they stay healthy? And so far they have. But the difference is this year, I think the Mets have enough depth to withstand a few injuries. And we're seeing it right now. Remember, they were supposed to have Jed Lowry in their starting lineup. They're supposed to have Todd Frazier in their starting lineup, and they don't. And you don't really miss them because the guys they have instead have been performing. And that's the difference with the Mets, where in the past few years with them, if they suffered an injury or two, they were done. They were calling up AAA players you've never heard of. Now they have big leaguers that could sort of slide into some of those jobs. And that's why I think the Mets are going to be able to stay in it and give them credit, too, for starting Pete Alonso in the big leagues. You know, a lot of teams that have stashed him in AAA for a couple weeks, he's in the big leagues, and he has been fantastic. He looks like he has a chance to be one of the best, a real Rookie of the Year candidate.
Is there a challenger in the Central, as loaded as Milwaukee is? Is there a challenge in the Central, maybe from the Cardinals or if the Cubs right their ship? Where could Milwaukee feel some heat?
I love the Cardinals. I love the Cardinals coming into the season. I know they've been sort of inconsistent to start the year. They're 6-5, but I really like the team they put together. Paul Goldschmidt, of course, is a great player, and he's had a great start to the year. I also really like the Cardinals starting pitching. It's better than it's performed so far this year, so I do believe the Cardinals are going to compete with the Brewers. That said, the Brewers are great. There's no question the Brewers are great. They came within a game of going to the World Series last year. There's a reason for it. The Brewers are also doing it shorthanded, where their sort of vaunted bullpen has not been there. You know, Corey Knebel's out for the year. Jeremy Jeffress is not pitched yet this year and won't pitch for another couple of weeks. So the Brewers are going to get better. But I do really like the Cardinals. And then the Cubs, the Cubs are a really fascinating question. Now, we talked about the Red Sox as a team that, do I worry about the Red Sox? And I said, no, and I stand by that. But with the Cubs, you asked me, do I worry about the Cubs?
Yeah.
Yes, I worry about the Cubs a lot. The Cubs have some real organizational issues right now that you sort of wonder, are we watching the beginning of a real sort of implosion where there's going to be big changes with the Cubs? And look, I'm not going to say definitively that's happening. It's only been 10 games. But the warning signs were there going into the season, coming out of last year through the winter. And nothing so far this April has sort of changed that belief.
Jared Diamond, Wall Street Journal on Major League Baseball and a Progressive Insurance Hotline. Thank you so much for giving us a little insight 2 weeks into the season. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
You got it. Again, Jared Diamond, Progressive Insurance Hotline, Progressive's home insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Yeah, the Red Sox, again, this is, you know, we always talk this about baseball. It's a marathon, not a sprint, yada, yada, yada. But the question I always have with struggling teams is, right, are you in a division where there is another team in your division that is equal or close to being as good as you are, that is playing really well, so that if you're taking 3 weeks to figure yourself out or 4 weeks to figure out how to start hitting or whatever you're struggling with, do you find yourself behind the eight ball so much that it's really daunting to get back in? That can happen in Major League Baseball. I know, it's weird. Here we are, April 10th, and the idea of, you know, this thing ending at the end of September is just, it feels like eons away. And that's true. But you don't really want to be 9 games back at the start of May or something. I mean, you really don't. I mean, that's a lot of games to make up. And you can do it. I mean, don't get me wrong. You eat a little bit here, eat a little bit there, eat a little bit there. And, you know, you can accomplish that. That's not a problem. But if you, let's say you run into a juggernaut. Let's just, for example, say the Yankees really start putting things together. Guys start coming off the injured list and the Yankees start winning games. Or the Rays for that matter, continuing to do what they do, right? They were not projected to be a last place team. They're projected to make a run. If you're the Red Sox and you keep losing series and you keep losing games and you don't know what's going on and there's discontent in the clubhouse and there's people screaming in New England about what's going on with the Red Sox, and you find yourself, like right now, they're 6 games back, and you find yourself 10 games back, 11 games back at the start of May, yeah, and the other team just doesn't seem to lose, and you find yourself in some trouble, right? So you can fall behind enough to be worried in April, even though, again, we're not talking about a 5K here. We're really talking about a marathon, and you got to be really careful. By the way, the Mets, and the reason I bring up the Mets, Jacob DeGrom, he's right. Jacob DeGrom had a bad outing last night, but nah, so what? He's pitched so phenomenally well for a year and a half that it's, you know, he's bound to have one where they tag him. And the Twins got 6 home runs against him last night. This kid, Pete Alonso, man, he can really slug the ball. I mean, he's got 5 home runs already. And 5 home runs. And Michael Conforto can hit. They've got some talent. Injuries have played a part, but you look at the Phillies and you look at the Braves, and these are two of the elite teams in the East. And if the Mets continue to pitch and pitch well and get production at the plate from these young players that they've groomed through the Binghamton Syracuse pipeline, if you will, including our friend, former Heisman Trophy winner, the Mets could be very interesting this season, unless they do the Metsy things that we know that they can do and embarrass themselves. All right, 800-777-2907 is the number on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with 2 N's, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we have a couple of more since Tiger Woods last won the Masters things. You've come up with some pretty good ones. All right, go ahead.
Well, one that stirred it all, because you had mentioned Tebow, is that, and we can say it this way. He was probably one of the first people to take a knee.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
But, you know, Tebowing was a thing since Tiger last won a Masters.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Not only that, the whole Tebow phenomenon occurred while he was away from the Masters spotlight. Tebow arrived in 2006 in Florida, and all of Tebow happened while we were waiting on Tiger to win the next green jacket,
and it continues to happen while we're still waiting.
That's right, exactly. Which will be first, major leagues for Tebow or Tiger winning the Masters?
God, there's your bet.
There it is.
What happens first?
Tebow's never quitting.
Tebow gets a call up or Tiger Masters jacket or just major?
He's getting a call up, man. I'm telling you, you guys laugh all you want. I'll be laughing in September.
Another one that I thought was kind of awesome was when Tiger won his 14th major in 2008, the 2008 Open, pulled into a tie with the Lakers with 14 NBA championships.
Gotcha. Okay.
The Lakers got two more after that. So he is two behind Lakers.
Oh, he's two behind the Lakers. Yeah, you got to make that happen.
But the Lakers are still two behind Jack. So, that's, you know, kind of, I guess it all works out, right?
Very true. That's right. That is correct. Goodness gracious.
Man.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, that is crazy. Do you think he looked at Phil Mickelson, like, winning the British Open a couple years ago and like, man, come on. I gotta get my butt together.
I gotta get back into this thing.
This guy's winning majors in his 40s. What am I doing? Check this out.
I just hope the glutes stay activated.
Yep, just hope it stays activated is right. All right, it's SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM as we roll along on a Wednesday.